handle the truth.
Should we or should we not follow the advice of the galactically stupid?
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
You're all a bunch of fucking assholes. You know why? You don't have the guts to be what you want to be. You need people like me. You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy.
Clearly, don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Righteous Brick Podcast. I'm your host, J.L. Covan. It is 1:30 p.m. on Sunday, May 23rd in the year of our Lord, 2021. Some free time on a Sunday before I do some chores. Monday is going to be a little busy for me. So I thought, why stress out? Why not just deliver the people the Righteous Brick Podcast 36 hours or so early? So you're welcome in advance. Yeah, it's getting hot in here, so take off all your clothes. Cookie is passed out on the rug, trying not to turn on the AC, although it's like already in the 80s in New Jersey, because my apartment keeps pretty good temperature. It really only heats up in the evening, but I'm starting to feel warm. Just had my hot green tea, so we're keeping, it may be a different day of the week, folks, but we're keeping with tradition. So I'm feeling invigorated. I went out last night for a birthday observed with my best bud. Unfortunately, the bar we used to always go to for my birthday, an 80s bar known by many in New York and many lists as the douchiest bar in New York City, it closed during COVID, which was, on a trivial scale, one of the saddest things that happened to me over COVID. But they only closed like a month or two ago, so they made it through. Much like my comedy career and Moses, they made it through most of the struggles, but still couldn't enter the promised land of reopening, or in my case, getting emails replied to by club bookers and agents. Anyway, we're going to try not to get bitter this episode because we, you know what? I don't know what are the five stages of grief? Is that what it is? Where it's like anger, denial, masturbation, anger, acceptance, or whatever it is. I feel like there's like three stages of JL comedy grief, which is delirium, fury, depression. And that's when you know you're back at, you're good to go, when you just feel despondent over your comedy career. So I think I've reached that point. Like I told my friend last night, it was good. Oh, it was good. We went out, what's the name of the place? A Supply House, I think. I would call it sort of a bar. I'm sure it refers to itself as a gastropub. went, hoops was on. We caught up. I don't know if everybody in the place was vaccinated, but I know the three people in our party were fully vaccinated. Two Pfizers and a Moderna, if you're keeping score at home. I am the Moderna. Had some chicken fingers, which were delicious. Then had they have a great burger and hand cut fries there. So look at me influencing. If you're in New York, Supply House, great, great bar food. I will not call it a gastropub. I'm very, very Republican when it comes to that. I don't appreciate when bars identify as gastropubs. I don't like terms like that. I feel like it's some marketing douchebag came up with that term. So I call it a bar. or a pub. And it was delicious. And then made it home. The trials and tribulations of when you don't have the energy to stay out all night. Like by 10:30, I was pretty much tapped out. But we stayed out at the bar till like 11:20. And then I walked to the 6 train, caught the 6 train to 33rd Street, walked from 33rd and Park to Penn Station, caught the 12:05 to Newark Penn Station with 4 minutes to spare. No one, I'd say, it was a packed train car, and I'll get back to this in a second, but I'd say there was a group of 15 young white preppy gentlemen. Like, I'd have to guess they were like college age. None wearing masks, started mocking masks when the conductor left the car. They just seemed like, I couldn't tell if they were in town from Clearwater, Florida, or if they were just sort of that, you know, sons and daughters, well, all sons of white flight in New Jersey kind of dudes. But it was very disheartening to see that. And I'll get back to that in a second. But then I get to Newark Penn around 12:25. And at that hour, the only options I have are a cab. And the local cabs charge you anywhere between $25 and $1,000, whatever the gentleman from the Caribbean or Africa decides he wants to charge you at that time of night is what you'll end up paying. Cash only, of course. So it's that. Or a Lyft, which would probably be, you know, between $20 and $30 at that hour. But then I looked at the bus schedule, and there was a bus, my bus, leaving in 4 minutes. And I said, that's pretty good. So I saved myself at least $27 and got home 5 minutes to one and watched half of Saturday Night Live, because when you've basically committed a mass transit version of an episode of 24, you got to cool down a little bit when you get home. So I had a Mrs. Fields chocolate chip ice cream sandwich, diet starting today, of course, and watched a little bit of SNL and went to bed, woke up with a splitting headache, mainly because I only slept 5 hours and my bedroom gets extremely bright in the morning, which is, you know, typical for me. I can only sleep in the winter, basically, in my home. And, two beers, I don't think, would have given me a headache, a hangover headache, so I'm pretty sure this was just a night 38 of my sleep-deprived marathon that's going on. So in a rare moment of energy, I said, let's do this podcast instead. But that was a boring travel section of the podcast that I normally don't do and don't plan on doing again, so thank you for sticking through with that. Off the top, a couple of big announcements. Making Podcasts Great Again, as always, you should be subscribed to that and listening to that show. Two huge shows in June. Well, two huge weekends in June so far. Hartford Funny Bone, if you are in the vicinity of Hartford, would appreciate you coming out if you can. I'll hopefully be in a city, in your city, wherever your city is. This is a selfish ask, because this show represents a big opportunity with the Funny Bone chains for me. So if you can't make it, or if it's really inconvenient, don't break your neck to get there. But if you are able to, and you can gather up some friends or family members or spread the word to people you know in sort of that half of Connecticut, greatly appreciate it, because it's a huge show. So June 10th, ticket link is on the Hartford Funny Bone website, and it's also on my website. And the weekend after that, if I have any folks in Long Island, any listeners, fans, friends in Long Island, June 18th and 19th, I am opening for Roy Wood Jr. of Comedy Central. Great guy, great comedian, nice enough to ask me to open for him. So that ticket link is on the governor's website or on my website. One-stop shopping, just go to my website. But would love to have, strong showing at those. It doesn't reflect anything on me if you don't, the Long Island shows are for you if you're in the area, because Roy Wood, I'm sure, will have no problem selling tickets. But if you're in the area and you want to see me live, then absolutely come to those shows, please. The Hartford one is for both of us. If you're anywhere near Hartford and can come to the show, greatly appreciate it, and it really matters to my career. I hate to put that pressure on it, but it does. So if it is convenient for you and you are able to, and you're a fan, by all means come. If it's not convenient, you know, then don't. But I did get a complaint online from a fan who was saying, I can't believe the club makes you buy two tickets. And I was like, well, you know, you just get a friend. And if nobody can make it, then just consider it. I've waited 18 years for this moment, and just pretend like tickets to see me for this special event are 50 instead of 25. That's the best I can do. But, you know, no good career goes unpunished. That is the motto of my comedy career. I filmed 3 Mike Pence podcast episodes this weekend. The episode 4 will go live sometime this week for everybody on YouTube, but I am holding back the episodes 5 and 6 for the imminent, hopefully imminent, paywall Jemmy fan subscription site, the sort of Patreon-esque website with the people I've been working with. So, like I said on a previous episode, I'd be looking to do, you know, movie reviews, book reviews, bonus podcasts, monthly live shows via Zoom, and bonus videos. And I want to keep some of those Pence videos back for the paywall. Also considering starting a different series of Andrew Cuomo Reads His Own Book, audiobook. That could, I think, be a simple but fun series. And some of these might just be early access. Some will be exclusives. And then hopefully in July, I start filming a lot more of my old-time sketches, which were collaborative efforts and much more, you know, ambitious and fun than just doing stuff by myself in my apartment as things open up. Still having a hard time getting used to just being out in bars. I know some people will roll their eyes at that. I don't know why. I'm out. I'm vaccinated. I, you know, am going into places. But it's just a little gun-shy, mainly because I don't trust other people. And you don't want to be somebody that carries it to someone who doesn't have it, because there's many reasons why people might not have the vaccine yet. Hesitant, unsure, access is becoming less and less of an issue, to be honest. But, you know, there might be somebody out there who really doesn't want to get the vaccine for whatever reason, and they're taking all other precautions, but they have to work. Now, it'd be nice if they just got the vaccine, but I don't want to be part of a chain of events that leads someone to get the virus, you know, whether it be some older person or some whatever. There are still people dying of it every day, and I know I'm no longer at risk because I have the vaccine, and despite my, you know, podcast fattiness, probably not in a risk group. But you know, you've been, yeah. You know, the cynic would say I'm brainwashed and frightened. I would just say I'm, you know, we just had 600,000 people or more die in this country. It's still ravaging other parts of the world. That's a traumatic event. I don't think it's something to be looked at flippantly or disrespected, all that loss. And, you know, I have a friend of mine who I think he's not an anti-mask person. He's definitely not somebody who would, I think, go into a store or a place of business and, like, make a scene. I think he respects the rules while having his own personal opinions. But I've become sort of the go-to reference for, like, mask-loving douche for some reason. And my mask philosophy is very simple. When I'm at a restaurant and I'm sitting down, for the most part, I will keep my mask on. Not because I'm fearful for me, but I know that the staff in the restaurant has to wear the mask and they have to work. They are obviously, if they could choose not to work, I'm sure they would. Or many would if they could get equal pay. But, you know, you want a job, you want to work, and this is the job you have. So I feel like if I can provide any ounce of additional comfort, because they don't know that I'm vaxxed. Like, there's no requirement that I be vaxxed. And I see a lot of young people who I their cavalier, disrespectful attitude towards all this gives me pause to think, like, oh, I'm probably in a bar right now with people who aren't vaccinated. Now, what if this server is not vaccinated for whatever reason? Just because they don't want to get vaccinated doesn't mean they should automatically just take all risks. You know, but unfortunately they have to in many cases. People, you know, just like grocery store workers had to risk so much during the pandemic. I think, you know, as a courtesy, not as fear for myself, but as a courtesy, I'm like, well, you know what, this table, we know masks can prevent the spread. And so I'm gonna, you know, unless I'm eating, I'm going to keep it on for the most part because we are in a contained space. I've been walking outside without the mask as I'm allowed to. I had a woman like walk way out of her way to avoid me. And I was like, in my head, I rolled my eyes, but I'm like, you know what? This shit was like the idea that this wasn't traumatic. I don't know. That woman could be nervous for any number of reasons. Maybe she lost a couple of family members. Maybe she's got pre-existing conditions. Maybe she just looks at me and sees a guy who looks like a Jersey Italian guy and is probably, you know, high-fiving Matt Gaetz while tag-teaming COVID-positive teenagers. I don't know what she thinks when she looks at me, but the point being, I'm not going to judge her for being like, I can roll my eyes and be like, but you don't know that I'm vaccinated. So I feel like everybody has their own comfort level, but I don't think wearing a mask indoors is necessary. Like my the righteous girlfriend works in retail, and you know, she had to tell people throughout last year, once she went back to work, to wear their mask. Like, so the vaccine or not, there were people in New York who didn't want to obey the rules, even when this shit was like raging, which is the part that I don't get. Like, to me, if I went into a store, I would just wear the mask, not because I need it, but I'm like, maybe it just makes some of these people who have to be here feel a little more comfortable because there is no check. Now, let me tell you something. If there was a requirement to enter a business or a venue to be vaccinated or to have a negative test or a vaccination, I'd feel much less of this empathy and stress because I'd be like, oh, your business is taking extra precautions to make you feel better and to make us feel like we're not in a potential spreader event. So that's great. So then I'd be like, oh, I'm going to keep my mask off because I feel like precautions are at a higher level here and you no longer need me to signal to you that, hey, I'm doing right by you, waiter, waitress, clerk, salesperson. But it's weird to me that that becomes perceived as like I'm some sort of mask fanatic. Like I was on an Amtrak. I guess I wrote this up, but I tweeted about it. I was on Amtrak coming back from DC, and I was, to me, what's disturbing to me, it's the lack of rule following, which sort of, you could argue some of these rules are arbitrary, and obviously the guidelines have changed. But the fact is, if I'm on an Amtrak, if I'm in a venue that requires masks, say no more. Like, we just got through, we're not even done with it, but we got through hopefully the worst part of a historically horrific event in American and world history. So when I see people not wearing their masks properly, I'm not concerned for me. I'm vaccinated. According to the science, I'm good to go. I'm concerned for other people and for the respect or lack thereof that it shows other people. Then I also joke about people who aren't wearing their masks correctly. That doesn't make me fear getting COVID. It makes me fear for society, where I'm like, I'm on the Acela. This is the expensive Northeast train. These are the educated and people with some money folks. And two of the 10 people sitting in front of me, and I'm only in row 6 or whatever, two of the 10 people in front of me are not wearing their masks correctly 14 months into this. That's not me going, oh no, I'm going to get COVID. That's me going, what hope is there for us if we haven't mastered the art of wearing the mask 14 months into the pandemic? That's just me making an observation of, oh, every day goes by, I feel less and less hopeful about the future of this country. You could say, hey, all the mask fanatics are ruining the country, but I'm just saying, well, you're wearing a mask. You're required to wear a mask. You're following the rules, but you haven't quite nailed down the technique yet. That's like a comically hopeless feeling. Whereas the other people sort of violating the rules outright, I go, don't you have respect for the rules or for like other people or other people's sensitivities or possible vulnerabilities? I don't know why. This isn't like a normal time. I don't know, but we can't band together. We have Marjorie Taylor Greene saying that masks remind her of the Holocaust. And I'm sure she was a European history major and we should take her comparisons with great weight. But, you know, and then I'm on New Jersey Transit last night and New Jersey has a lot of pockets. It's a blue state, but there's a lot of pockets of MAGA and of ignorance. And it wasn't all like on my way into the city last night, three women were sitting directly across from me. One had her mask. I would say one was extremely attractive, one was fairly attractive, and one was unattractive. And the unattractive one had the mask around her chin. I guess she didn't think she could get away with full non-mask, but the other two were just like masks off, having a loud conversation. When the conductor came through, a young white man, he was obviously smitten with them. He didn't even check my ticket. So I guess I'm a beneficiary of their ignorant cleavage, but they like slid the masks on when he came by. And in my head, it's the same argument I have on the Greyhound bus I took to South Jersey a month ago, which was, you know, it's not a pop quiz that the conductor's like running on you. It's for the people sitting here that you're wearing the mask, not for like the conductor to give you a check plus for obeying the rules. And I didn't have the energy in me to like reprimand them or say something. And I wouldn't have been a dick about it, but I just would have said, can you put your mask on? Because there's no answer. The answer is then like, I guess what, you know, you get some sort of defiant white girl like, what are you, a cop? Why don't you mind your fucking business? I guess that's the worst that would have happened. But then the conductor walked back through, still didn't check my ticket. So thank you, conservative Jersey whores. But that's a possible podcast title. Not afraid of getting COVID from Jersey whores. And it meant a lot. My friend told me last night, my buddy told me last night that he's a huge fan of Cuomo saying ventilators. It's always nice to hear your friends or fans give you their favorite thing. He's a huge fan of ventilators, and he's also a huge fan of my smug Ron Reagan. So that's always nice to hear. But he walked back through and they had their masks down and he saw them because he was looking at them because I think he, the blonde with the cleavage was definitely good looking, and her brunette friend was also very solid, and their other friend might be just friskier. You know, the ugly one might be the one who's most game to do nasty shit. I don't know, but he was obviously smitten with them as a group, saw them without their masks, said nothing. That was just a prelude to, I go out in the city, have a nice night, very tired because I don't sleep, but then I get onto New Jersey Transit and you're like exhausted. And I just see these 15 white dudes in front of me, probably, if I had to guess, I'd say between 21 and 24, and a whole group of them. I'd say 15, there were one guy wearing a mask, two with it around their chin, and 13 or 12, whatever the math is, with no masks in sight. And one of them, you know, I'm sorry, you can start to extrapolate things, but I was looking at one of them, the one who looked most sort of Aryan and thought he was the coolest. A black woman walked by and he had his phone kind of in the aisle because they were all kind of congregating together. And the woman said, as sometimes ornery black women can on public transit in New Jersey, watch your phone, as she walked by. And he looked back and looked at his friend and said, watch your, like he just said it to him, like he wasn't trying to get into an argument with her, but he was like, why don't you watch your, and he kind of paused. And I don't know if he could feel my faux Italian, actually biracial gaze looking at him for yet another instance of people being racist in public in front of me. But he just paused and said, watch your leg. But I couldn't tell if he was going to say fat or black, but he definitely showed restraint there. that was a little Tom Cruise. He showed some restraint there, and I don't know if to appreciate it or just say, what was he going to say? Once again, the racist pub owner in my neighborhood, which breaks my heart because I want to be watching NBA games. They're eating their delicious bar food, and I can't because, once again, I can live in some blissful ignorance. I can take whichever pill in the Matrix makes you forget shit, but once you say it to me, once you actually say it, I can infer all sorts of racism. But when it comes to my own happiness, I can ignore what I think is a racist person. But if I know you're a racist person, if I have ironclad audio and or video proof, well, then I can't. My conscience won't allow me. So when that dude called the three black teenagers orangutans in front of me, I was like, well, I'm not coming here anymore. I wish you had just said assholes, and then I could tell a funny joke on my podcast about how I bet you wanted to say the N-word. But I can't convict you. I can't deny myself your delicious bar food and your nice ambiance if
You didn't actually give me the smoking gun. That's the compromise I can make. I can look at so many people and infer racism, like this young man, this young maskless Johnny Lawrence on the fucking train last night. I can infer his bigotry, but I cannot convict him of it, and I cannot accuse him of it because I don't have the smoking gun. So for podcast purposes, I can treat him like a raging racist. But I can't treat him like that in real life because he did not give me the hardcore evidence. The guy at the pub in my neighborhood gave me the smoking gun. So now I'm stuck getting good but inferior pub food at other places in my neighborhood while the nice shiny new place that I just want to park at the bar with my vaccination and be like, turn on the jazz game. I am going to be a major presence at this bar. By the way, Utah Jazz are 16 wins away from a championship. That's a big 16 wins, and they will be a tough 16 wins. But let me tell you something, $18,000 if the Jazz win the title this year. I bet $500 on them in the preseason. In the words of Donald Trump, we'll see what happens. But that would be a great day for me, obviously. It would be a great day because, to be honest, the Utah Jazz winning a title is worth way more than $18,000 to me. I mean, they're my favorite team all time. It's been a lonely journey for the most part, being an ardent, passionate, and extremely loyal fan of that franchise. But man, if they win that title, $18,000, I gotta put like $3,500 away for tax purposes. Even though my taxes may be covered this year because I'm paying a shit ton in anticipated taxes, and I am not likely to make the same level of money I made last year. But I figure for that 18 grand, I think I put like $5,000 towards a charity. And maybe doing the math, that leaves me a 13. Put like $5,000 just into savings. And then just $8,000 on the most awesome Utah Jazz fan trip next year. Just like, we're staying at the Ritz-Carlton. Well, they probably don't have Ritz-Carlton. We're staying at whatever Mormon, like, super-duper. Which is the Mormon? Is it Hilton? No, Hilton, not Hilton. Marriott. We're going to stay at the fanciest fucking Marriott. We're going to go see two Jazz games courtside. And that's that. That's what I would do with my winnings. So I would donate to a charity. Maybe Rudy Gobert. Rudy Gobert has a charity, so I think maybe that would be fitting. They'd be like, well, you earned this, Rudy. Your charity earned this with a championship. Put a little bit of money away for myself. And then just go... I guess some of that money might be me flying out to the Utah Jazz parade. And then like, maybe I'd just do like an impromptu show on the street and be like, everybody meet me at the corner of Jebediah and, Milk and Cookies Avenue. And we're going to have a fucking impromptu JL show. Jebediah and Milk and Cookies Avenue, the cross of Jebediah Street and Milk and Cookies Avenue. Wish I could make that a title. Already forgot the title I said I was going to call this podcast. My brain is really rattled, folks. But anyway, these guys are sitting there with no masks. A couple of black dudes in the front of the train with no masks on either. So I thought, well, that's Jersey for you, a rich tapestry of assholes, a diverse tapestry of shitheads. But I'm just sitting there going, but it's the rule. And I know I'm fucking a former prosecutor, and maybe that's, but I'm a fan of the rules. And even if I don't believe in the rules, I may break them on rare occasions, but really rarely. Like I smoked weed a couple times in college, didn't get anything out of it, so said, well, why am I going to keep breaking the law for something that's not doing anything? That said, I would like to try some legal marijuana in New Jersey, see if it mellows me out a little bit. I'm not trying to become a wake and bake guy, but you know what? It's legal. I've done things that aren't super healthy. But, you know, I don't think I would get addicted. But I'd like to, you know, hey, what if it relaxes me? The way, you know, I'm just saying, I'm open to it now that it's legal. But I had no more interest in violating the law just because. So most of the time, I'm a law-abiding, rule-following guy. And I see wearing masks on public transit, A, it's the rule. B, I think it shows societal respect. These guys were sitting there and I saw them exchange looks when the conductor, young white dude. So this was, if I were more cynical and woke, I'd be going, this is whiteness protecting whiteness. But no, I just thought it was like dude who doesn't want to get involved. And it goes to show you, there is power in mob strength. Like in other words, this conductor would have had to reprimand half the train car to put on masks, and then he would be leaving the train car. it just, I wrote this, it's in my Twitter drafts, but I wrote this last night and discussed it with my friend on the way in. This was before going on the train ride out, but I said, Donald Trump is far more representative of the American people in terms of his character, honesty, self-dealing, self-importance, and self-concern than Joe Biden or Barack Obama. Like, you know, that's why the presidency used to be about picking somebody who's, you know, catered to the better nature of our angels, not somebody who we wanted to have a beer with. And Donald Trump, to be honest, he's a horrible human being. But I think in terms of his selfishness, in terms of his shittiness, I see many more Donald Trumps in the world than I see Barack Obama's or Joe Biden's. Joe Biden from a quality and empathy standpoint, Barack Obama from a deliberative intellectual, I'm not saying he's not a bad person, but obviously if you're talking about their most outstanding traits, Joe Biden's is his human empathy. Some of that I'm sure I can speak with pride stems possibly from a Catholic sense of forgiveness. But and Obama was just a very talented, smart, deliberative person. Those are not traits that I see Donald Trump traits a lot more than I see Obama Biden traits. And on this train, I just was very dismayed because I just thought to myself, what are we doing? Like, what, like, why can't, and the guys were smirking at each other like they got away with something, like they had no concern or respect for other people in the car. And having dated someone who had been a dancer, a nighttime practitioner of the dancing arts, the woman next to me, I think, was a dancer headed to a club for, you know, like or home, possibly home from the club, because she had the mask, but she had the fake lashes on, two bags with her, and kind of a squeaky voice. Read into that what you will if you are a psychologist who's dealt with grown adults with childlike voices. But she had her mask on, and I said, "Good for you. Good for you to practice safely. I hope you practice safely in all your engagements out there, young lady." But she had the mask. People behind me had the mask. Plenty of people with the mask. But it was like, it's this idea of like, not only am I not wearing a mask, but fuck masks. And like, fuck you if you want me to wear a mask. And I'm like, that makes me, I feel like there's a high percentage of people who will not follow the rules that also aren't that concerned about getting vaccinated. And that to me, and I could be wrong, but it was, if you've gotten vaccinated, I feel like you can think the mask mandate is too much, but like having disdain and making fun of masks on public transportation feels like a step too far. It makes me think you're not a vaccinated person. I could be wrong, but it's just, you know, it's one thing to be like, I got to wear this mask. Masks are stupid. But then not following the rules is one level. And then not following the rules and then like high-fiving each other that you got away with it in front of other people, like on a public train that just want to stay safe and keep others safe. It's very dickish. But that's Jersey for you. So lax enforcement on the train, which was disappointing. But, you know, that's what you get, folks. That's what you fucking get.
That's what you get. My voice, I'm not quite in the Sam Elliott level, but I'm not sleeping has made my voice a little deeper.
Like my Trump impression, I've had to do a couple cameos and those, it's I've had to do a couple do-overs because I'm like, my voice isn't there. It's like all this lack of sleep is sort of affecting its depth. So that's our mask portion of the show. So my point is, I wear a mask because it's the rules, and also because in public spaces, I think it shows courtesy and respect to other people who don't know my vaccination status. So if you can collectively put some people's minds at ease who, for whatever reasons, don't have the vaccine or are still worried about maybe members of their family who might be vulnerable, I wish it wasn't such a libcuck, douchebag, mask-loving fucking asshole thing of me to do, to just be sort of courteous and respectful of other people's sensitivity. You know, I get that's why I'm about masks, not for my own health. My health is good. I have done the right things and I am obeying. I'm following the science, as people say. And I'm getting tested on Tuesday. I'm going to go get a COVID test because I've been doing some traveling. And that also, I think anybody out there who's a comedian doing traveling, hey, you don't like masks or you think you're safe, great. But you know what? We still should be getting tested, especially comedians or people doing a lot of traveling, because you don't want to hit somebody with it who isn't vaccinated yet. That's, once again, just courtesy, not self-fear, collective social responsibility. That's what I'm about, or try to be. I also donated a shit ton to charity last year, so I'm a great person. And I've already donated a lot this year, even though I'm starting to regret that. I'm like, ooh, this year isn't shaping up quite as... apparently, I'm going to be doing some extra tithing this year if the income continues at the 2021 rate, which is still better than any year preceding 2020. But 2020 was such a baller year, folks, that I kind of want just some shit to fall into my lap again. Big announcements also. I am looking for, if you are a fan of mine, in the following cities: Philadelphia, Chicago, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Boston. Although Boston, I'm very close to lining up some fall independent venue dates. So if, I know I have a lot of fans in Boston. So if you're a Boston person, I hesitate to say this because I'd like you to go to the Hartford show. That's why I spaced it out to the fall. But rest assured, if you are a Boston person, I'm going to have shows there in the fall, it seems. But I say that out of respect for your time and your money. But God, I still need you to go to Hartford. No, seriously, only go to Hartford if you can. If you can't, and you're from the Boston area, then you're doubly obligated to go to those Boston shows if you don't show up to Harvard. Hartford. If you went to Harvard, bonus, tell all your Harvard friends and tell Conan O'Brien and the people that write for that show that if they have room for writers on any new projects, to contact me. Which they won't. But if you are in Philly, Chicago, LA, San Francisco, and you know of any good independent venues in the 80-seat to 250-seat range, I would love to come to your city and perform, because those are places where I have a lot of interest and a lot of fans and no replies to my emails. So I'm now at that level where I'm trying to stay positive and reward the fans, reward myself with some money, but also reward the fans with coming to your city. I want to go to any city that I can generate enough money to make it worth it. If you know any, I've already gotten contacted by someone in Philly with some venues, but if you know of any, like I said, 100 seats, 80 seats, 200 seats, 250, in those cities, though, I'm certain I could bring it. If you're a fan in one of those cities and you have any info or any place, obviously don't recommend like the fucking 4,000 seat opera house. Like, I saw Sebastian Maniscalco at the Wells Fargo Center. You should try booking that. No, that's not what we're going for. but I had a show, for, alums of Williams College this week. My 20th reunion was supposed to be this June, and that was canceled. Putting the liberal in liberal arts college, am I right? But which is unfortunate. I was looking forward to that. Although, considering that I haven't gotten my weight under control, I guess it's sort of fortunate. I don't want to show up there. The former, like, jacked guy who now... There's all sorts of cautionary tales about, like, look at him when he was 20. Like, all college athletes and, like, basketball big men especially, where it's like... He was 6'10", 255, and could jump out of the gym. And then you show up, and it's like, where did his jawline go? This fat piece of shit used to dunk. Anyway, I did do a Williams alum show, though. And I'm getting paid in a meager honorarium, which is fine. It's still money. I found it interesting, because on the show, it was various... comedians, some who I think were like legit stand-up comedians, some people who had been writers. I don't know if some people were like improv or character people, but I did find it like they had warned in the email. They were like, this is for Eefs. That's our mascot is a purple cow, and our team names are the Eefs after Ephraim Williams, who founded the school. So that's cool. I'm sure they're looking to find out if that white man did anything wrong, and we can cancel him. But, once again, he is the founder of the school, so I feel like canceling, you can't, it seems hard. I mean, they canceled Papa John from Papa John, so you can cancel the founder of something, but it would feel weird. Like, would Williams College have to then become like, we are now Mountaintop College. We are now lonely liberal arts in the part of Massachusetts no one cares about college. I found it interesting. They gave like a warning. They were like, hey, this is for Eefs 18 and over, meaning just like this is a real comedy show. This is not like a corporate event. This is like a real comedy show, so we're not telling the comedians what to do in terms of content. Now, I still kept my set mostly clean, but I had some bits. I had my Marilyn Manson bit in there. I had a couple of bits. And the first comic of the night, I joined the show like 10 minutes late, and she was going, and she was pretty funny. You know, somebody who seemed to be someone with experience as a stand-up comedian. So she had kind of a tight set, if you will, mostly autobiographical. But, you know, at one point she had mentioned she was a black woman, and she had mentioned she was bisexual and polyamorous. Now, I decided not to do my joke about polyamory where I go, oh, you're polyamorous. Oh, okay. You know, normally I identify as someone who likes to fuck a bunch of different women, but that makes me sound scummy and like a dog. But when you say polyamorous, it makes you sound very highfalutin, like I have terms that make my basic human nature seem much more elevated than you. So while you may go out and fuck women, I'm polyamorous and not afraid of burning in hell. I've always found polyamory to be funny, where I'm like, why do we always have to... It seems like as soon as you put like a couple of Latin prefixes and suffixes together to describe your basic human nature, it gets this automatic kind of progressive elevation. Like, oh no, well, he's polyamorous, so that's okay. And it's like, aren't we all sort of polyamorous? Don't many of us want to be polyamorous, but we make choices in our relationship, but somehow, I'm not cheating. I was just very clear that I have no intention of keeping myself to myself, no matter how deep the relationship I'm in. That actually makes me an elevated thinker. Anyway, I obviously didn't do my polyamory bit for them. But she got to one point in her set where, let's just say, the phrase swallowing cum came out of her mouth. And I sat there and was like, bull, that's okay. Well, I guess everything's fair game now. Not that that's the worst thing you can say, but it's a very blunt sort of image, thought, phrase for an alumni comedy show. But I figured, oh, if we're going to... And there was laughter. There was a lot of laughter. And I was like, okay, well, my shit's safe then. A couple jokes about Marilyn Manson should be all right. So when I got to Marilyn Manson, and one of my lines was, I can't believe Marilyn Manson was a bad boyfriend. We must be thinking of different Marilyn Manson. I'm sorry, I just thought of that. Marilyn Manson... That's pretty good. The plural of Marilyn Manson, instead of being Marilyn Manson's, Marilyn Mensons. I am writing that down, folks. That is subtle, and there will be like two people in the audience who get it, and they will come up to me after the show and go, I got the Marilyn Manson bit. And I'll go, what do you want, a fucking cookie? Buy an album or get out of my face. So I get to the point, I go, we must be talking about different Marilyn Manson. The one I'm thinking of couldn't have done that. You know, the one I'm thinking of is the one who allegedly had a rib removed so he could orally please himself. That can't be this Marilyn Manson who's a bad boyfriend. Crickets. Crickets, folks. And that's when I kind of had an idea. And I thought, you know, I'm always walking that line of wanting to be on the progressive side of things for the most part as a person, as a citizen. But as a comedian... Not so interested in who can say what and when. There are some boundaries, of course, that I respect. I don't even say the N-word. Not that I have any interest in doing it, but I'm half black, and I know I have black friends who would endorse my usage of it as fully allowable. I'm just not comfortable with it, and I've gone into that not even as so much a holier-than-thou thing, although I'd like to think if I looked blacker that I still wouldn't use it, and that would be my choice. But... but beyond that, I'm, you know, if a joke is good, I feel like people should be allowed to use it. I don't think they should weaponize comedy as an excuse to say horrible things. But if you say something that's kind of horrible or off-putting and it's really funny, then I don't think it should matter if you are the right demographic to get away with it. But when I told that Marilyn Manson joke and it got, that part of the joke got crickets, in my head, I was like, this feels like a double standard, like, because this isn't even a, oh, you can say that and he can't say that. But I had this slight suspicion that what was working on the subconscious or conscious level with many of these liberal arts attendees was, well, let's put it this way. The
LGBTQ black woman who's also polyamorous, which really isn't part of that scheme. That's just your choice in how you conduct relationships. But this is an LGBTQ black woman. If she wants to say swallow and come, not only am I okay with it, I'm going to laugh my ass off. 25% of that is just discomfort laugh, but also her bravery and her license to say whatever the fuck she wants. I trust black women. It had a little bit of that vibe because when I just said he had a rib removed to orally please himself, I'd say language-wise, I was definitely on a higher plane than swallowing cum, but nothing. And once again, I think the Italian-looking guy talking about gross celebrity urban myths, urban legends, yeah, we're going to pass on that. You don't have the license to say whatever you want, talented comedian, because even though you've told us you're half black, you're still a cisgendered male. And not sure I really want to hear abrasive, disgusting things coming from your mouth. I don't trust half-black Italian-looking men. Okay, that's not the hashtag I subscribe to. And I could be reading too much into it, but it felt like I thought, oh shit, she said swallow and cum. Boom, game on for all my jokes. And just to be safe, I'm not going to talk about cum or anything like that, though it is inferred from this Marilyn Manson joke. But an inference of a dude that looks like that sucking his own dick, I feel like should be safe now that we've entered the vulgar sex descriptions portion of the show. And apparently it wasn't. And I still had a great set and, you know, still mocked people and shit and, you know, mocked their non-laughing of it. I said, well, I'm going to trust the comedy clubs instead of the alumni group of the tiny liberal arts college. And that got a laugh. And the set went very well, so I was very pleased with it. But it was one of those things that I thought to myself, and this is the balancing act. Oh, and by the way, other big announcement. Book your plane tickets, folks, for New York City, October 23rd. We got two shows at the Triad Theater in NYC, where I recorded my first two albums, by the way. So it's a real homecoming for me. But Triad Theater in New York City, October 23rd. It's a Saturday. 7 o'clock and 9:30 shows. We're gonna definitely make an album out of it, and I'm in the next month or two gonna figure out if I want to invest some money into making it, you know, like a filming of a special. And I think I may because 5 months is a little farther out than I want, but then I have no excuse not to have an incredibly tight, strong set for then. So I'm excited about that. So. It's a Saturday. If you're in the tri-state area or if you're planning a trip to New York, I should have a ticket link in June, but I'm giving you guys the first heads up. Very excited for that, obviously. And based on how mentally stressed, distressed, stressed, and despondent I am regarding comedy, wouldn't shock me if that's the old farewell show, to be honest. Not for life, but just for my comedy career. I know I've been the boy who cried wolf, but people don't understand. I actually basically did quasi-quit comedy in 2019 when I took a full-time job and moved to New Jersey. I was sacrificing 90% of my time that I could have dedicated to comedy. But the point being, luck and fortune during a terrible year smiled upon me. And unfortunately, it feels like there's an even bigger negative reaction as far as my career is concerned. And it's causing me to lose sleep and stressing me. And at some point I just have to, as long as I'm doing it, I have to give it my best effort, but that becomes very exhausting and emotionally taxing, especially when you sort of expected a little bit more respect and good fortune considering everything I did and accomplished last year. But it only leads to sort of a bigger crashing feeling because the expectations were raised. So the point being, I'm in this for 2021 for sure, but I really have to, you know, sleep is important. Personal happiness is important. Not creating just discomfort to the people you care about around you is very important. And comedy is this all-encompassing stress. And I didn't walk away from it completely, but I made a tough choice in 2019 to take a job because I thought it was the right thing to do, and I think it was. And also to move to New Jersey in terms of prioritizing other things in my life. And, you know, I've never been more stressed and more unhappy with comedy than I am right now. And that, for longtime fans and listeners, obviously that's a bold statement, but it's true. I've never had comedy
fuck up my sleep for months. I've never, like, when I think about doing a show, like, this was a Zoom show, this Williams show. It was a Zoom show. And I felt like almost, I've never had panic attacks or anything, but I was for the first time feeling real anxiety, like mid-afternoon, just like, why can't, can I just quit this show? Like, I just wanted to quit the show, not because I didn't have good stuff. Just the idea of doing comedy was like stressing me, different than like, oh my God, this is a big show, I'm nervous. This was like, oh my God, this is like interfering with my life happiness, comedy. It's a really fucking bizarre whiplash. I can totally admit that. But point being, maybe I'm not, there's a certain level of, I guess, disappointment and disrespect that I'm not built to deal with. And I thought I was, like, I've been dealing with it for most of my career, ups and downs and having great successes that just didn't materialize into anything bigger. Like, there was never another door opening for me. And I opened a big door for myself, thanks to a lot of you last year and many other people. But it's still not, but the career is still a total question mark, which just means it's so much more stressful because, understandably, my expectations were raised so much more last year. Like, I have booked the same number of gigs in 2021 as I did in 2019. That's really depressing, if you think about it. If you think about who I was in terms of the comedy landscape in 2019, and who I am in 2021, you'd think there would have been, if not exponential growth, at least linear growth. But there hasn't been, and it causes me great tension and great stress, and doesn't to my core. Like, I am constantly restless because of this, because I won't spend another decade prioritizing comedy if it's not going to yield the material benefits that I think it should. So, as I've said before, if I had an agent, I'm pretty sure. And people tell me, people keep giving me 2010 advice about like how set I am as a comedian. And I'm like, am I? You know, you guys know the story. I've bitched about it enough. But like, how can you tell me I'm set? Like, it's weird. It's like you must not be paying attention. Because you're judging me based on all these metrics. But obviously there is some unknown factor at work preventing me from even getting close to where I should be. So it's very disheartening, and thank you for listening to that, because I think it helps a little bit, just being able to vent about it. But it's, I can't keep sacrificing sleep. Like, this isn't like sacrificing sleep because I was on the road all night going to a bunch of gigs. This is like sacrificing sleep because my mind is too restless and I'm too anxious about seeing my comedy career somehow fail when I really thought I had succeeded. It's very weird, but thank you for listening to that shit, because I know it can be probably exhausting and annoying for you to keep hearing the same gripes, but I'm just telling you, get to that October 23rd show. And for everybody who's written to me about any number of cities, there's pretty much no one has contacted me with a city that I have not performed in before. And 2/3 to 3/4 of the cities you are asking me to perform in, I have pre-existing relationships with the comedy clubs in those cities. So as you can imagine, it's disheartening and baffling as to why I can't get any traction pursuing off nights. I'm pursuing independent venues in some cities where I feel like clubs are ignoring me. So I'm doing everything I can, but it's tiring, and it's like a new form of rejection when you feel like, wait, didn't I just get accepted though? Didn't I just do everything that I'm supposed to do to create a space for me? And I guess not. Getting an agent. If I had an agent, I would have, I don't think it's a stretch to say I would have work almost every week for the remainder of the year if I had an agent with any clout that was pushing me and displaying my social media numbers and my clips and my press and all that. So at some point you have to look at the thing and say, I want it to happen. It should happen. I think it should have already happened. But some sort of magical alchemy or combo of my humor, look, demographic, I don't know what the magic sauce is that perpetuates failure for my career. But at some point, what should be
will only make you, if you keep harping on what clearly should be, but not on what is, and it doesn't help when friends contact me who know nothing, and I'm not saying they're not well-meaning, but who know nothing about this business or what I have put into it, kind of assuring me, they give me counsel and pick-me-ups based on what should clearly be happening. And I go, yeah, but it's not. And you keep telling me from a point of ignorance, well-meaning ignorance, but ignorance, what should be. And I'm like, but it isn't. And I have to decide what I do with that reality, that I still feel like I've done everything to put myself in a good position artistically, talent-wise, skill-wise. But then at the end of the day, harping on what should be will only make me unhappy and more stressed. And at some point, you got to just say, it's not going to be, so I won't do it anymore. And, you know, I said last year, I said I would not go into 2022 with two jobs. and I don't know. I think I will try to keep that word. Whatever job I have in 2022, I think has got to be the only job, because it's exhausting and it's mentally taxing. And the day job may be a nuisance as far as my dreams, but it had zero to do with my unhappiness, my stress, and my lack of sleep in the last year. So, you know, like I said, the day job is Boof from Teen Wolf. And you've been here the whole time, sweet day job. Sure, maybe you're not as conventionally hot as Pamela Wells, comedian, but damn it, you're good to me, and I got to prioritize you. So, wow, we got there again. We always find a way to get to the unhappy, but hopefully you enjoyed some of that podcast. My run of Peacock shows, as I travel the streaming service less traveled, or I take the path of the streaming service less traveled, and that has made all the difference. But I finished season 2 of Mr. Mercedes, which for any fans of that Stephen King trilogy, Mr. Mercedes, Finders Keepers, and End of Watch, it felt kind of like, I don't recall everything in the books, but it felt like seasons 1 and 2 basically took care of books 1 and 3. Without spoiling too much, it feels like season 3 I'm more curious about, because I'm like, what are they going to do with season 3? But I loved season 1 and I really liked season 2. So I know Peacock is free and you can watch seasons 1 and 2, I think, with commercials for free. And I'm also watching Girls 5 Ever, because it's like, it's not from Tina Fey. She didn't write it, but one of her writers wrote it and she's producing it. And I watched the first 2 episodes a couple days ago and was like, it seems to have a fun gimmick, but maybe it's only a gimmick. Maybe without Tina Fey's like driving force behind it as far as the writer's room, maybe it's just going to be like kind of an echo of a Tina Fey show. And then I got to episode 3 and 4, and episode 3 had me fucking dying. Very subtle. It's the hallmarks of like kind of the New York and lefty sort of humor that Tina Fey really excels at, both left-leaning but also mocking very specific New York left-leaning things. But it made me laugh so much. Episode 3 and 4 was really good too. So now I'm on with Girls 5 Eva. It's about a one-hit wonder girl group from the late 90s. It's not Kimmy Schmidt level great, but it's winning me over. And like I've said about comedy before, Ted Lasso is fine. I enjoyed it. Schitt's Creek is decent enough. I didn't hate it, but comedies will always be for me laughter first, everything else second. So like feeling good is not a requirement for me of comedy, and it does not elevate an okay comedy to great comedy for me. So laughter is the key for me, and Girls 5 Eva had me, it finally got me really laughing. I'm glad I gave it a couple more episodes, because it like 3. All I'm going to say is it's a very intricate sort of creation in episode 3 of something called New York Lonely Boys. But all I can say is when Sarah Bareilles' child on the show is like doing a TikTok dance to the theme music of the Daily podcast, the New York Times podcast, I was laughing in a way that made the righteous girlfriend, I think, uncomfortable. Because she was like, what is that? I was like, that's the New York Times podcast. This is one of the funniest things I've seen in 2021. This episode is making me laugh so hard.
It's God. But I, yeah, so Peacock is free. So if you don't mind some commercials, I think you can watch both those shows that I'm recommending if you're at all interested in them. And if you're not, just continue being a Netflix hack, okay? but that's it, guys. That's a Sunday. Once again, I managed to drag myself down into the dumpster by the end of this podcast. So thank you for joining and being part of that journey. Wear your mask if you're required to, and certainly wear it if you're not vaccinated. Get vaccinated if you're not vaccinated. Cut the shit. Stay safe. Stay healthy. Be respectful of your neighbors and your community. I think that's not... That doesn't make me a cuck mask psycho. Hartford, Connecticut, Levittown, Long Island. That's your June shows. And then put it in your calendar. If you're in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, put it in your calendar, October 23rd. Make that trip to the city you've always wanted to see. Come see Hamilton on a Thursday. Stay for JL on a Friday or Saturday. I'll make it worth your time. Maybe not worth all the money you're traveling, but I'll make it worth most of the money you're using to travel. And obviously, if you're a New York-based person or a tri-state area-based person, you are expected to be there. I think that's it. So thank you for listening. Have a great week. And this is going up Sunday, but I will still see you next Tuesday.